Radio Le Mans is the world's most listened to event radio station. In Race Week 2006, over 1.4 million people visited the website, and many thousands more listened on Globecast and, of course, at the circuit on FM. Radio Le Mans. The Radio Le Mans studio receives an email on average every 45 seconds. In addition to the listeners, Radio Le Mans delivered over £190,000 worth of media coverage for its partners. The Radio Le Mans audience is your target market, and it's highly targeted with no wastage. For more details on how to reach this desirable demographic group through advertising, sponsorship, and hospitality opportunities, email info@radiolemans.com. Radio Le Mans, the spirit of the weekend. Radio Le Mans is a Radio Show Limited production.
And before we get that underway, let's welcome back down in London, Tim Gray. Hello, Tim.
Good evening again, John.
Now, this is going to be very difficult because we hear ourselves back the way this is configured. So as soon as Nick speaks here, things are going to be very difficult as well for listening to him twice here. It's bad enough listening to him once, quite frankly. On a packed programme tonight, Tim, what do we have?
Well, it's even more packed than it than even I planned it to be, because we're now down to just 44 minutes of programme. So we will have Declan Brennan with his ear on the oval. We'll have Nick Damon with some news. And if we've got time, we'll try and squeeze in a Call My Huff.
Oh, I'm very surprised. Right, well, we're going to kick off with the motorsport headlines.
Do you have Nick Damon yet?
We have him, you see.
In that case, we'll kick off with the motorsport headlines, which means I need to press that button.
Globecast Radio.
All the week's motorsport news. Midweek motorsport on Globecast Radio.
And I think we ought to start by talking about Lewis Hamilton.
I don't know who you're talking about. Lewis who?
He apparently is the person who, if you'd put money on him to win the BBC Sports Personality of the Year for 2007 with Paddy Power, you would now have your money paid out, despite the fact that the result isn't decided for another 5 months.
Yeah, he's about 9-1 on.
Yeah.
Glad you check this stat, because I'm very sad.
Yeah, and because you wanted to make a quick buck and you've missed the boat.
By about 6 races.
Yes. Ralf Schumacher has suggested that Toyota is partly to blame for his disastrous 2007 season so far.
No, they're totally to blame for hiring him. If he wasn't driving for them, he wouldn't be having a bad time. You know, he'd be fine.
The German, who has won 6 Grand Prix, has borne the brunt of a media scathing this season after failing to match up to his teammate Jarno Trulli. But Schumacher said he's less concerned about his 0-6 qualifying record against Trulli than with the uncompetitive car he drives.
And the uncompetitive way he's driving.
Formula One Motor Racing must expect fatalities in the future, despite improved security measures, which probably saved the life of Polish driver Robert Kubica on Sunday.
I don't think that's probably about it, is it?
The expert has said James Penrose, who's the man who brought the hands device to FIA-sanctioned motorsport, told Die Welt, at some point there will be a fatality again in Formula One.
Unfortunately, he is obviously correct, but we've managed to go, 13 years. Robert's accident was huge, but the monocoque wasn't actually breached. The hand system and the softer cockpit higher size did their job, and he gets away with a sprained ankle. It's unbelievable. I mean, look at the impact which Palmis had, 9 years ago, or 10 years ago, in the same place, and broke both his legs in a much more minor way.
The doctors at the hospital in Montreal, which treated Robert Kubica, have declared him fit to race. But according to Hans Stuck, talking to another German newspaper on Monday, he said that's extremely ambitious and the FIA officials are unlikely to agree.
Well, I agree, because a lot of other sports, like rugby, for example, have a 7-day concussion rule. If you suffer a concussion, you can't play a game for 7 days, because there's a thing called secondary concussion, which if you get another knock on the head within that time frame, can be very, very serious and can actually, sadly, result in instant death, believe it or not. It's very, very strange.
It can be something as little as just heading a football or getting a tap on the head. Doesn't have to be a big thump.
No, I cannot see, if he had concussion, that they would let him run, and I'd say for 2 reasons. Despite Elvis's racing driver, he's going to want to go. The FIA don't want to take the risk, and BMW certainly don't want to take the risk. Also, BMW, who quite like to try drivers, as Jacques Villeneuve found out, had the perfect opportunity to try either Sebastian Vettel, or who I think they should try, Timo Glock.
Well, Timo Glock, of course, has experience of running at Indianapolis. And?
But isn't that round a bit, though?
No, I think he's done the road course there as well.
No, did Canada.
He did Canada. He's done some... Did he do a Porsche race at...
I'm not sure. I must admit, I know...
Two years ago.
To be honest, though, I mean, I think Timo is a better bet. He's doing very well. His GP2 form is better than Sebastian's Renault by Nissan by Nissan by Renault powered by Renault World Series form.
Yes.
And I give him a nod, but the question is also, because the big rumour now is that Timo is the one in the frame for Ralph's job.
Yes. Very interesting.
He is.
moving on, because when we play this bit of music, we associate it with one particular Portuguese driver.
Oh, no. It's not Tiago Monteiro's T-shirt hour.
It's Tiago Monteiro.
Wheel
who,
or no wheel.
Drive or no drive.
Has now been presented with the Order of Merit from the President of Portugal and the Balcava for silver.
For what? He got a podium in WTCC, didn't he?
For his professional successes in Portugal and abroad.
That's a long list. The third at Indianapolis a couple of years ago, when six cars took
part. It was two podiums in six races in the WTCC.
I see, I knew it was. Those Portuguese, they love a bit of World Tour car.
No one else seems to. A bit of a press release for us. A victory in the opening race, two pole positions and a fastest lap at the Nürburgring meant Carlo Van Damme did good business at the ATS Formula 3 Cup.
Did good business. Well, he got paid.
The Dutchman also tried to take victory in the final race of the weekend, but had to let go of Frederik Verwisch in a do-or-die attempt at the
where,
start.
Where was he holding him?
After a decent race in which he overtook many other drivers, he finished in 8th place in the championship standings. Van Damme is still in the lead with 52 points, two ahead of his main opponent, who is Frederik Verwisch.
Ah, sounds like a fair fish, which but...
And third is Nico Verdonk. So the top three drivers in that championship all have surnames beginning with V.
See, now that really is one of the trivia. If the trivia buff, if it finished that way, it's going to be fantastic.
Well, hopefully Christian Vitoris, who finished third and second at the weekend, can continue his rise up the table and overtake Ricardo Bruins. They've sent me a lovely photograph of Carlo Van Damme with...
Is he an attractive young man? Does he have the look of a film star?
It's hard to say from this photo because I've printed this on my printer.
Very low res.
It's a bit low res.
You've done it in draft, haven't you?
He's badly lit, I think is the word.
That probably means he's badly lit in real life, or we call it ugly.
Bruno Senna completed a perfect weekend at Silverstone, taking two victories in his debut weekend in the Ferrari Challenge.
You're a bit quiet, Tim, by the way.
So is it... He was up against what? Rich Tuggers.
He said, I've got to be happy with this weekend. I was fastest in free practice, two pole positions, two victories and one fastest lap. The only thing I missed out on was fastest lap from the second race.
Oh, well, okay. Honestly, wasn't trying.
It's been very beneficial racing at Silverstone this weekend with the GP2 race there in a month. I got a lot of laps in, so while I get here for GP2, I don't have to think too much about the circuit.
But hadn't he run there on F3? Do F3 not run the Grand Prix circuit?
Not on the Grand Prix circuit, no.
All right.
And finally, as we go back to obscure press release of the week, which we love, the ladies of Bognor Regis Motor Club are delighted to announce the final figures. It's been a difficult week due to the fact that all of my normal sources are full of Le Mans stuff, and I'm trying to avoid that.
Surely they're full of Lewis Hamilton.
No, everything is about Le Mans.
Problem. I've got this real thing about Lewis Hamilton that I keep wanting to call in the Great White Hope. Which, I don't know why, because obviously he is from British Motorsport, that's what he is. But, you know,
but, yeah.
Terrible.
The ladies of Bucknell Regis Motor Club raised £22,093.90 for the Against Breast Cancer and Orchid Fighting Male Cancer charities, which brings a 10-year total of fundraising fund to £193,488.98.
And have they done this with a sort of rally sprint, or is it a cake stall?
They have been doing
topless calendar.
Most tours. The next one will be based in St Austell.
That's in Cornwall? That's not near Bognor Regis.
Well, no, they're going a long way away.
Okay.
Clearly. And is that the end of the news?
Do you think it ought to be?
Please don't tell me you've got some New Zealand supercar bit stolen story again.
No, that really is the end of the news.
All the week's motorsport news. Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
It's Midweek Motorsport. I'm John Heindorf with Nick Damon in Le Mans, and Tim Greer is back in London. Charles Dressing also with us in Le Mans. Good evening, Charles.
Good evening. I'm just wallowing in the twilight.
You have got an absolutely tremendous view up there, haven't you?
It's the best place to be on this particular planet at the moment.
Yes.
Because
what's
the light
in the pit lane, what can you see?
I see a very attractive woman running down the pit lane. People from Corvette are out sort of looking around. People from Audi look very industrious, and there are many people in front of the Audi garages looking in. I'm looking across the 64 Corvette, all quiet on the Corvette front.
And we will have a chance for you to be a winner with Radio Le Mans and Midweek Motorsport tonight with our friends at the Silverstone Le Mans Series. A fantastic prize up for grab, which includes driving a Ferrari.
Ooh.
Yes. Don't say we haven't pushed the boat out this week, because we have. That's still to come tonight.
And that boat take you all the way to Calais?
It was a Sea France boat. It was indeed a Sea France boat taking us all to Calais.
And serving some of us a very nice meal en route.
You'd consider any transport nice after your flight, though, Charles?
Well, this happens to be true. This is the last time I crossed the Atlantic on an airplane without a Union Jack on the table.
Wise move, Charles. Wise move. All right, Tim, what other delights do you have for us?
We have, still to come. We'll have time, I think, for Call My Huff a little later on.
I'm excited to know who this might be.
Well, I was thinking, with your wealth of motorsport talent over there, you might be able to find someone, but obviously you can't, because every single person working for Radio Le Mans in France has already played this game, except Gary Champion, and presumably he's not around anymore, is he?
Mr. Champion, in fact, is on the end of a pit mic. Gary, can you hear us? Mr. Champion?
Oui, bonjour.
Right, now, which one are you on? Are you on three or four? Speak to me.
What would you like me to say, apart from the fact that I'm in the back of the garages, at the back of the courages, and back of the Matmut people.
Like saying Matmut.
Prononcier.
Ah oui, the Mamu.
Thank you.
Merci. And Monsieur Le Prince was there earlier, in fact. The professor.
Very nice.
So if we bump into him, which is the aim, we'll see if we can't have the spoken word with him.
Well, do you think we should have a bit of Call My Huff right now, then, Tim, while we have him?
Well, we could either do it with Gary, or I have someone lined up at this end as a reserve, if necessary.
Another honoree, not Pescarolo, of course, but Frost with me. So let me just have a wander into the Mamu people and see if we can just barge our way in here. And see, we won't actually barge our way in because of the press personage. But let's go possibly in. Hang on one second, let me just ask this man nicely. Alain Prost?
Oui, il est là-bas.
Ah, he is here.
Il est là-bas.
Okay. Come on, Henri. Now, Henri might be braver than me, so he might go and grab a word
into
with
English.
The professor.
Gary can't hear you, Tim.
Let me just see. Oh, here he is. Okay. So, sorry, we're just in a pause mode.
Oh no! Hurry up! It's programmed.
One of those moments coming. Now's an inappropriate time, I feel.
It's wrapped by a very large number of team friend media. We will do our best to dive in. And who won 51 Grand Prix between 1981 and 1993. And four Drivers' World titles as well. Quite an impressive CV.
But Le Mans, Henri.
Are we going to get him, guys, or are we going to move on to something else?
No, we are going to get him. We're just actually waiting. If you want to move on to something else, just quickly, because Canal Plus are just waiting to do something with him.
Gary can't hear you, Tim, so indeed. You can't talk over the top of him.
If Gary can't hear me, then of course Gary won't be able to play call my half.
That's a very good point. Well made and nicely
so
presented.
We will use the contestant we have lined up at this end. But first, let's do this.
Good evening, stroke, good afternoon. And it's not really the ear and the oval this week. It's more ear on the figure eight.
Yes.
Because obviously the major breaking news story is, of course, that the other man who leads me to tedious amounts of boredom and narcolepsy, Dale Earnhardt Jr. has had his press conference today.
Mm-hmm.
And he's announced that he will be racing for Hendrick next year, and he will be replacing Kyle Busch, which, to be perfectly honest, is an absolutely enormous surprise.
Yes.
On account of the fact that Kyle Busch is pretty much the quickest guy every week. I know he's a terrible look, and he's not doing particularly well this year, but he is pretty much the fastest guy every week, and yet Junior is replacing him.
But at the same time, Antonio Pizzonia was very fast as well, but he never seemed to manage to get it around the corners in one piece. So
he's gone, isn't he?
Yes.
Yes, anyway, that's another story. Maybe he'll appear on the ovals again soon.
We'll start with Champ Car then.
Yes.
And a historic moment at Portland.
Yes.
The very first standing start in Champ Car history.
And it was very significant as far as that it created an entirely different look to the series. And wait. News just in. No, it didn't. Sebastian Bourdais won comfortably.
Sebastian Bourdais, no stranger to standing starts, of course, having dominated the season of Formula 3000 where he did them every week.
Yes. He hasn't forgotten, clearly.
Portland, though, does have a lot of history with Champ Car, though, doesn't it? It was a circuit which held the first ever race back in 1909.
Goodness me, but it wasn't quite the same circuit, it has to be said.
It was the same place.
Yes, geographically speaking.
Yes.
It's got lots of, one of the closest ever, up to, I think it was up to the mid-90s, the closest ever finish.
Mm-hmm.
In the G.I. Joe's 500, as it used to be. In fact, the G.I. Joe's 200, I should say. Between
500 miles does seem like a lot.
Yes, no, 200. Between Michael and Mario, going back to their days when they were racing together in the PPG car, IndyCar series. And it provided a fantastic finish and Mark Blundell's debut win a few years ago in...
Yes, I think that was 97.
I think you're right. It also was one of the spots of a friend of the show. Damien Faulkner won one of his two Indy Lights races there in the West a few years ago.
Next year, that might not be on the calendar.
Well, yes. You see, this is the major problem that single seater racing has in the United States is that nobody's interested.
Well, they claim that 70,000 people went through the gates.
Well, I would be very suspicious about that. Unless, of course, they're entirely correct if 35,000 went through the gates in and then 35,000 left again through the same gates. Then it really didn't look remotely full. In years gone by, the grandstands on the front straightaway will be absolutely packed, and they certainly weren't this year. It's on its last legs, you would say, and it's such a shame.
A lot of people would point to the fact that, or a lot of people who work for Champ Car, presumably, would point to the fact that the Saturday qualifying day was very, very wet, and that might have put people off from going.
But nobody goes on Saturdays anywhere. Look at Champ Car. I beg your pardon. Look at IRL qualifying, or look at
Indy 500 qualifying.
Oh my goodness! No, but even look week in week out at Nextel Cup qualifying. You know, Nextel Cup is huge. Nobody goes to qualifying. There's never anybody there. So you know, it's just a sad. It's every week we seem to be discussing the sad demise of a once great championship. And Portland is just, and Portland, you know, for years was one of the sort of safe bets, really, that they knew they could go there, and because of its location, it's tucked away in the northwest. They could always get a big crowd, and they're not even doing that now, and it's just very, very sad. Can we talk about more exciting things like the ongoing feud
because of course, in the week leading up to last weekend, IndyCar really dominated the US single seat news because of the previous weekend's fight.
Oh, that's right. Oh, fight, yeah.
So Champ Car have obviously decided that they need to copy those tactics, and there's been another fight between Graham Rahal and Dan Clark.
Well, another fight. They've clashed again, and then there's been a war of words. I like the sudden moment of clarity, as alcoholics would call it, that Graham Rahal had when he discovered that it might be in his best interest not to qualify so far down the grid.
His actual quote was, "We just need to make sure we start up front."
Yes.
We missed it this weekend, but towards the end we started to get it.
Yeah, but it didn't really help. I think he's got a lot to learn. He's got a lot to learn in terms of not trying to, you know, qualifying in a poor position and then trying to outbreak everybody into the first corner, you know. And he's got a lot to learn. He's a massive talent, and he's just got to calm down. You almost forget, based on the fact that he's, you know, he's been fast tracked into this series. He could have arguably done with another year in Atlantics, but. And that's, I know you, in conversations we've had off the record that you probably feel the same way, but of the new age of racers, i.e. himself and Marco Andretti, I do believe he's in the right formula to advance his career though right now, even though both of them, to go forward in the right way, do need to be in Formula 3000, I beg your pardon, in GP2, or maybe even Italian Formula 3000.
I suspect Italian Formula 3000, which Graham Rahal has tested that car. I suspect that neither of them will actually do it. It's
no.
It's not that important.
They're not Swiss, so they won't be doing it.
Can we move on to our occasional feature of pointless press release of the week?
Yes, absolutely. Which I know you're a huge fan of. Not many people around here are, but you know, go ahead. We'd like to keep you happy.
PitFit Training today announced that one of its clients, Sarah Fisher, has partnered with one of its sponsors, Shock Doctor.
Right. Carry on.
Shock Doctor, headquartered in Plymouth, Minnesota, is a widely recognized brand leader that uses innovative technology and design to provide superior protection and enhanced performance for people who are passionate about their sports.
Right.
And basically, this is things like mouth guards and knee and elbow protection and things like that, I think.
Right. Not hands devices or crash helmets.
Obviously not.
No.
But I mean, obviously, if you're wearing the hands device and the crash helmet, why would you need all this extra padding? Unless you're going to crash.
Well, with something she's relatively familiar with, what else does it go on to say? Because it has to get more interesting than that.
It gives a bit of background information about 26-year-old Sarah Fisher, who last year won the 2005 NASCAR West Regional Series Most Popular Driver Award.
Never have you heard more clutching at straws. Yeah, she raced for Richard Childress recently in NASCAR West to absolutely no effect whatsoever. And the best they could come up with is that she was voted the most popular driver. That's just because she was the only girl. I presume that was amongst the other knuckle-dragging drivers.
Northwest NASCAR Series, or NASCAR West Series, not just Northwest, the whole of the West Coast. There are a few other facts here. Apparently, she's the fastest woman to ever qualify for the Indy 500.
Well, that is true,
which is,
I believe.
And an achievement.
Yeah, that is actually true. So that's not the worst achievement in the world. It'd be nice for her to finish one year, but I can't talk about IndyCar women any longer. It's just too tedious. But well, you have some other IndyCar points you'd like to bring up with me, I do believe.
Well, we're not going to talk about the race because it was a bit dull, to be honest, apart from the big one, which took out six drivers and promoted someone who should have finished just outside the top 10 up onto the podium. we'll move away from that. I was watching NASCAR after its rain delay and thought this would be a perfect venue to hold an IndyCar race.
And I think, I tend to agree with you on account of that. From a TV point of view, you don't really get to see the grandstands, so nobody would know that there was nobody there.
The TV angles, for three-quarters of the track, you're just seeing trees.
It does look like it's in a public park. I think it's an extraordinary place, with that enormous back, tree bush-lined back straight. It's weird.
But it's not just the back straight, it starts before turn two and goes all the way through to the middle of turn three.
That's very true. That is very true, and it would be great for for the local residents, because you know the noise would be kept to a minimum and nobody would get disturbed and there wouldn't be any crowd to worry about being there. So you know, well, of course, it's Pocono, as you talk about it, as has had its fair share of single seater racing over the years, and in years gone by was one of the big marquee events on the. On the what would have been the USAC calendar at the time, and the car PPG IndyCar calendar, and we've had some pretty extraordinary winners, including 1983 Teo Fabi in a March.
Ooh,
yeah, going back a bit as one at Pocono, but
when was the last major single seater race there?
Well, the last major champ car race was 1989,
right?
And it was Danny Sullivan, one of the Penske. For Ilmore.
Well,
go on.
No, you first.
Well, I was just going to say the idea, of course, that gets bandied about throughout the Nextel Cup field is that because it's flat and the turn three requires that there's some outbraking to be done in turn three after the long straight and blah, blah, blah. Oh, and it's like the closest the Nextel Cup field has to a road circuit on an oval. This is the sort of the perceived wisdom of that. So, just before Juan Montoya went out on his qualifying run, as he was trapping himself in, the microphone was shoved in front of his face, and he was just talking about the car. And then they dropped that bombshell and went, "Is it really like the most like a road course?" He just laughed and put his helmet on.
Yes, treat that question with the contempt it deserves. onto the race, someone who. I hadn't heard of before, took part this week. A guy called Chad McCombie. Chad McCombie.
Oh, you're clearly not watching nearly enough truck racing. He's a stalwart of the truck series.
I don't get to see that in Europe.
But, and it's very good. You must. It's tremendous. But he did compete in the, it was one of the few races this year where the Busch series went off somewhere else to race, and they went to Nashville, and the ARCA series came in and raced at Pocono.
Mm-hmm.
Which is it's difficult to describe ARCA. It's a bit like it's in some ways it is a development series, but you tend to go into ARCA and stay there.
Right. It's not that good a development series then.
Probably because people can make a living there, and because of the type of cars and the regulations, you can make a decent career racing. Frank Kimmel, for example, is a stalwart of the ARCA Remax series, mm-hmm. and he's made a quite a big name for himself in ARCA to the point where if my memory serves me correctly, he gets invitations to race in IROC and stuff like that, and at various events because he's considered the top man in his craft. So they were racing there this weekend, but
and Chad McCombie won that race. So
he did.
How did he get on in the next Cup race?
Ooh, I think he had if I remember correctly, he was involved in one of the numerous accidents.
Yes.
The race itself was splattered with some quite interesting collisions and accidents. One including Dave Blaney, who managed to almost do the impossible and completely flatten the back of his car to the point where.
It looked like a hatchback, didn't it?
Well, it looked like a hatchback, or as Carl Petty pointed out in the commentary box, he said it looked like an AMC Gremlin, if anybody remembers one of them. A very odd-looking little saloon car of the 70s in the United States, but that's exactly what it looked like. It was, what it looked like? It looked like, do you remember the BMW 3 Series two-door sort of compact thing they brought out in the 90s.
Yes, I know the one.
That's what it looked like.
Yes.
So well done to Dave Blaney for doing that, but well done top marks go to Steve Letart, who is Jeff Gordon's crew chief, because they produced an extraordinary pit strategy, which meant they somehow managed to work out when the weather was coming and when everybody else was going to pit. So they pitted off strategy with everybody else. Based on staying out early during one yellow flag session when everybody else went to the pits. It then meant that he was out of sequence. He and a number of others, including Ryan Newman and Casey Mears, ended up out of sequence. But they put themselves in the perfect position to win when the rains came. And boy, did the rains come just after the 100 lap
Yeah. Well, the rain had come earlier as well, which delayed the start by over 2 hours.
Absolutely, which of course is a nightmare for TNT because it meant that their audience figures were dropped 20% from last year because of the fact that everybody just switched off and went to watch other things.
Well, to be fair, they had been on air for 4.5 hours before the race actually started.
We have discussed this numerous weeks. What they tend to do is they tend to try and lure you along, saying we're going to have racing any minute, and you know, and oh, here's another weather forecast.
People aren't calling for that anymore, are they?
No, and Larry McReynolds barbecuing isn't going to do it either.
Yes, he's made the switch, hasn't he?
He has. Yes, he's gone to the dark side. He's now in the technical area, you know, discussing bits and pieces in cutaway cars, which is a relief for most of us because I actually quite like Carl Petty, and I think he's done a terrific job in his first week in the commentary box. But the extraordinary thing about when the rain did come was that it came on only one side of the circuit.
Yes, which you'd expect if you were with John and Jim at the weekend at the Nürburgring on the Nordschleife, where you have different weather on the different sides of the circuit. But it's just a small oval.
But it's not a small oval, that's the whole point. It's a massive oval. It's a massive, massive track. And so basically you had the bizarre situation where as the cars went through the start-finish line around the first turn and onto the enormous back straight, everything went hunky-dory. It cut to, for example, to the pace car in front of Jeff Gordon and Ryan Newman. They were in a torrential downpour. Absolutely bizarre. Now, the most notable thing of all is that literally 1 second before the yellow flags came out, Jeff Gordon radioed to say his car was done, his brakes were gone, it wasn't working. Ryan Newman dived underneath him and was just about to pass him when the yellows came out.
Yes.
If Ryan Newman had dived underneath him in 1 second earlier, Ryan Newman would have been the winner of the race. So absolutely extraordinary finish. But in terms of the overall championship positions, it really just means that, as we said before, that Jeff Gordon can, you know, light a cigar, you know.
250 points clear at the moment.
He's 242 points clear.
Right. Looking further down the points, Mark Martin is now back in the chase.
He is, yes. Mainly down to the very large points fine that Kurt Busch got.
Yes.
That combined with his terrible finish at Pocono. But really, that's pretty much down to both of those things. Mark, partial season, Martin.
The thing is, Mark Martin has only got... he's only done 11 out of 14 races so far. If he'd done all of them and scored points in the same proportions throughout the season, where do you think he'd be in the points?
Well, using my very quick and fundamentally flawed mathematics, I would put him in the top five, I would have thought.
How many points do you reckon he would have then?
He'd have around 1,900 points.
He would actually have, because we've done the maths, 2,019 points.
That would put him second.
That would put him second, and about 10 points clear.
Well, he's truly becoming the David Pearson of the next hookup, because David Pearson almost won the title running a selected schedule, running hardly any of the events. But then again, the difference was every time David Pearson turned up in the 70s, he won.
Yeah.
So it's
Mark Martin isn't winning, but he's finishing consistently in the top five or top 10 when he is racing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Although you have to wonder about how this whole point system is working when Clint Bowyer is an eighth.
Yes.
He's one pole, no wins, no top five, seven top tens.
In the rookie championship, Montoya, still early 20s, 21st in points at the moment, but it looks like David Reagan's catching him.
So he is.
Is that a David Reagan getting better or Montoya getting slower?
It's a little bit of both, I think. Reagan has, they've been on some tracks that have suited the Ford, I think, to some extent. But you have to remember as well for the first half of the season, really, all the Dodge teams have struggled. They really have. Penske and Evernham seem to be getting it together now. We're seeing vastly increased performance levels from, particularly from Ryan Newman and Casey Kane. On saying that, Montoya's team at Ganassi really don't seem to have got the grips with the Dodge at all.
No.
So he's, in many ways, you could say he's actually had to talk to him because he is the number one Ganassi driver in the championship, just ahead of his teammate, just ahead of David Stremme. By 1 point, bizarrely enough. But so it is a case of Montoya continuing to learn new tracks, while Reagan is probably in the better team on tracks that have certainly suited the Ford somewhat.
One more thing to say while we're talking about points, and that is Chad McCombie, after his one race, scored 36 more points than Michael Waltrip.
Yes, Michael Waltrip again didn't qualify. No. After bouncing back beautifully last week and making it into the field, didn't qualify this week, and neither did Dale Jarrett.
Where is NASCAR next week end, or this weekend?
Oh, it's the Citizens Bank 400 at Michigan International Speedway.
Excellent. So Michigan, the venue this weekend, and Declan will be talking about that next week here on Midweek Motorsport.
News from across the pond. If it happens over there, hear about it over here on Midweek Motorsport.
Now, we did promise you a competition, and what a competition prize we have for you. How about this? We're calling it the Le Mans Series at Silverstone Ultimate Prize. 2 tickets for the event, a checkered flag autographed by the drivers, a pit walk, access to the starting grid, the yearbook and the series DVD, an event programme, and an escorted tour of the pit lane. Now, that's not a bad price.
It's blooming good.
Well, I tell you what, you think that's good, add this to it. 30 minutes of safety and driving techniques briefing, a laps demonstration in Lotus Exige, 4 laps of driving the Lotus Exige, and then 4 laps in a Ferrari 360.
John, how do I enter?
Dead easy. All you have to do is let us know which diesel-powered team will race at Silverstone with their diesel car for the first time in the 1,000 Ks at Silverstone this year. Keep it to yourself.
Is it Kia?
I can't say.
Okay.
Which diesel-powered team will race at Silverstone for the first time this year? And Tim, how would you like the entries?
Oh,
he's going to sleep on me.
I think people should be entering by text.
Right. And which way do you want to do that?
What we need to do is the text lines will open as soon as Midweek Motorsport finishes, which is 8 minutes' time.
Okay.
So don't try and enter before you get through to... before the show ends, otherwise it'll go horribly wrong and your entry won't be counted and you may still be charged for the text.
Oh, it sounds like an ITV reality programme.
We have to say this now, it's part of the new legal thing.
Okay.
And you need to text the word motorsport, followed by your answer and your name to 60300.
So I text
motorsport,
yeah. Here, Nick.
Correct.
Ah.
To 60300. And text will cost?
Text will cost £1.
Right, and your network charges may apply. Which diesel-powered team will race at Silverstone with their diesel engine sports car for the first time this year in the Silverstone 1000 Ks? If you think you know, text the word motorsport, your answer, and your name to 60300. Text will cost you £1 and network charges may apply. The lines won't open until 9 o'clock UK time, which is 6 minutes from now, but they will stay open for a little while. Okay? So we'll keep that open.
When's your closing date, John?
I think we'll keep this running till Saturday lunchtime. I was going to close this on Friday, but we'll keep it running till Saturday lunchtime before the race. And then we'll pick a winner out and give them a call and find out who they are before the race starts on Saturday afternoon.
Excellent.
Okay, so, and there will be more chances to win with new questions tomorrow and Friday.
Ooh.
Okay.
So that will be in the bit immediately after the special brunch program on Saturday morning.
From Aston Martin. Exactly so.
Excellent.
Now, let's stay with what's going on here at Le Mans. We haven't heard very much at all from Tom Christensen. He's been kept away from the press just a little bit. He told us, told me when I was down at scrutineering that he was concentrating on his driving this week. But Gary Champion has just caught up with him down in the pit lane.
Fantastic to see you.
Yes, thank you. It's great to be here. And the soup is very good.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. It was good to be out in the car. The Audi R10 TDI, I think it's the best healing you can get or help you can get. So should people who have been through the same problem as me, I mean, they should just queue up and have a go in an Audi.
I mean, bearing in mind that, you know, if you're at home, it's a bit boring and so on. You guys race, and I, as you say, this is probably the best tonic, isn't it?
Yeah, it is very, especially when you're in a great team like I am, and also my teammates, especially Alan and Dino, they have given me a lot of confidence in the build-up or through this process. So it was all about giving me some dry laps, because the weather forecast for these 2 days are a little bit critical. So in a way, that definitely compromises the car's qualified performance. But it helps me getting up to speed, because I was not here the pre-test. And these are things which we do and get on with. And I hope that I soon will be very much up to speed, so we can look into the details for the race.
Well, you see, we've called you, Alan and Dindo, the dream team. But you're up against the Peugeots. How tough is that fight going to be here?
The fight, I think. I mean, to be honest, I have been more focusing on myself, getting back to the 100% and things like that. But obviously, it's great that they're here. The Lions are hopefully not sleeping in the night. I think it's good that they're here, and I think the battle we have, of course, with the older car and the younger car within an Audi, it will be a very strong and good battle. It's good to see Jack Villeneuve finally coming to Le Mans after a detour of obviously about Formula 1 and Jam car. It's good to have him here. I did my debut in a Group C car with him in Japan many years ago. I haven't met him yet, but it's good to have him here. And the driver lineup for the rest of the Peugeots are definitely looking very strong.
Tom, I'll keep looking up at clouds while you're talking to me. It is a bit cloudy. If it rains, does it make a lot of difference? I mean, that car that you've got is a very talky car. Any difference in the rain?
Yeah, the circuit has changed a little bit as well, but I mean, there are some parts of the track which has very, very little grip. So it there are some. You really have to be careful in some places, getting the power down out of the chicanes on the Mulsanne, for example, and getting into them as well. It's, we just experienced water now, and that part and the rest of the track was dry, so it was very interesting, and we'll see what comes. But my feeling is no more rain tonight, and then we might even be in slicks before midnight.
Great. We've had loads of emails, Tom, wishing you well, so thank you very much.
It's John Hindorf in Le Mans, and Tim is back in London for Midweek Motorsport.
Good
okay,
evening.
Tim, do your worst with the call by Hoff.
You're only ever 2 minutes away from...
Well, welcome to Call My Huff, and this week we're moving on to the letter W, John.
Yes, indeed. Sorry. Go ahead.
And after the fantastic success last week, of Jim Rowler, who was the first person ever to correctly answer no questions at all, we now move on to...
That's fantastic! I'm not last!
You're not last,
Nick. I can't believe it! Oh, that's made my day!
You were only ever joint last with Alan Hyde anyway.
Yeah, that was really
last. We want this week's contestant, who will be familiar to anybody who watches Channel 5 in the middle of the night, or goes to Pembrey on a regular basis. Our contestant this week is Jonathan from the West Midlands.
Thank you. Very pleasure to be here. Thank you, Tim.
Do you understand the rules, which I've explained to you during the news?
Just about, yeah.
Okay, we have 8 names. They are all either racing drivers or not racing drivers, but they all start with the letter W, and you just pick them in random order.
Okay.
So pick a number.
Two.
Number two, Henke Waldschmidt, driver or not a driver?
Driver.
No clues from Nick Damon, please.
I say driver, yeah, I'm going to agree with Nick.
I didn't know I might say that.
And you'd be correct. Okay, so another number, please, Jonathan.
Number five.
Number five, Dominic Wiegel. That's Dominic Wiegel.
Not a driver.
Is the wrong answer. Dominic Wiegel races in German Formula Renault.
Should have known that.
So another number, please.
One.
Number one is Norbert Walschhofer. Norbert Walschhofer.
That sounds like a driver, but I'm going to say not.
Norbert Walschhofer is a driver in the European Ferrari Challenge. So, one out of three so far.
It's going well. Three, have I had that yet?
You haven't had number three yet, which is Dick Weisenberg.
Not a driver.
He is a driver, FIA GT Championship.
Okay. It's going very well.
It's going it's going quite badly, actually. One out of four so far. We have four still to go.
What numbers have I got?
You've got number four left. You have number six left, number seven, and number eight.
Say number eight.
Number eight is Bucky Walters. Bucky Walters, driver or not a driver?
Not a driver.
Is the correct answer. Any idea who Bucky Walters was?
Jockey?
No, he was the manager of the Cincinnati Reds in 1948 to 1949.
Good heavens, right.
So, another one?
Seven.
Number seven, William Wordsworth.
This is a trick question. Not a driver.
Is the correct answer.
I can't believe how easy that is.
Well, it could have been a trick question, of course, John. Couldn't it? William Wordsworth, of course, is a or was a poet. We have number four left, and we have number six left.
Number four.
Number four, Gabor Weber.
Not a driver.
Gabor Weber is a driver. He races in the Porsche Super Cup occasionally. So finally, number six. Is Duncan Wu. You're currently on three, so if you get this one correct, that will give you four.
The law of averages must say not a driver.
You shouldn't
never
you shouldn't,
go with the law,
law of averages.
The law of averages,
because it's not weighted towards equality. But Duncan Wu is not a driver. He's in fact an author. He co-wrote the book Romanticism, an Anthology. So, Jonathan from the West Midlands, and frequently commentator at Pembrey Circuit, you score 4 out of 8.
And does that bring us to the end of For My Hooks, William Tim?
No, we still have the letters X and Y, and the letter Z.
Ooh, tough ones. And that's just about your lot for this week's edition of Midweek Motorsport, a truncated special here from Le Mans. We're back on normal time next week, 8 o'clock till 10, when we'll have our usual array of guests, silliness and irreverent comment about, well, mostly Formula One, frankly. That's all on Midweek Motorsport, on Globecast Sky 0157, or on www.0157.org. When we come back, we'll be talking about what's going on the track here at Le Mans, because we've got cars going back out.